Well, hey, everybody. This episode of the Press Run Podcast is brought to you by Out of the Park Developments, makers of Out of the Park Baseball 18, MLB Manager 2017, and Franchise Hockey Manager 3. I'd love to invite you to join us live every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on Twitch as Up First, our baseball community manager, TJ Lowerman, live streams Out of the Park Baseball 18 for an hour every night, and that is followed by our Franchise Hockey Manager team of Adam Burnett and Jeff Riddles streaming Franchise Hockey Manager 3 live at 10 p.m. Eastern. That's on twitch.tv/OOTP Developments, live every Wednesday night. But if you're not able to make it and join them on Wednesday nights, that's okay, because everything is archived to our YouTube page, youtube.com/OOTP Developments. TJ is always having a lot of fun with the community and continuing his stories, as are Adam and Jeff, as they go through various scenarios of different hockey teams and the hilarity that ensues as you try to take teams that maybe aren't exactly built for the Stanley Cup and take a run at them. And of course, TJ has been trying to get his Padres franchise out of the ground and up to the top of National League West. These are ongoing things that we do every single week. So please join us live on twitch.tv/OOTB Developments, live every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern for Out of the Park Baseball and 10 p.m. Eastern for Franchise Hockey. And you can pick up Out of the Park Baseball 18 today on Steam or directly from our website at OOTPDevelopments.com, as well as Franchise Hockey Manager on Steam or from OOTP Developments. Check them out. They are on sale for the end of the year, and it's a really great time to check those out. And of course, you can pick up MLB Manager on the iOS store for Apple or the Android marketplace. Go check them out, and thanks, everybody. Enjoy the show.
All right, so Madden NFL 18, it's here. We may still be a few days away from release, but those with EA Access on Xbox One are able to spend 10 hours with it, and that's opened up the floodgates on impressions and videos to go along with the review embargo having lifted, which allows media to talk freely about their experience with the game, how various aspects have been executed, and the outlook for the year ahead. Welcome back to the Press Row Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Weedy, Pasta Padre. In this episode, I'm joined by Millennium. That's Mills Gaming TV on your social and Twitch channels. We're going to talk all about Madden NFL 18, which the two of us have been playing for upwards of a week now. We're going to skim over various new features, gameplay, presentation, franchise mode, story mode, ultimate team, and more. But this is meant to be very much a general overview of the game. Next week's show, we're going to bring in the big panel for a more in-depth review roundtable. Well, Mills, for me, I see this year's Madden as maybe a bit disjointed. It does a few things exceptionally well, and we're going to get to what I think those things are. But it's not the well-rounded product that we've seen from some other sports titles or even some past Maddens. Whether it's the in-game presentation or franchise or even things like the menus, I didn't get that initial feeling that this was a brand new game upgraded across the board, which I think is important to a lot of people who buy annually. Would you agree with that assessment, or have you found something different through your time with the game?
I feel like this is the year of the polish. We said this about the show earlier this year, too. I think this is the year that Madden has taken all of its features, all of its additions, and really fine-tuned them to be perfect. Well, not perfect, to be as good as they can possibly make them right now, which is ironic in this case because one of the biggest upgrades is a new engine. Yes. Like they add Frostbite into it, and that's a huge addition, and it absolutely shows in the game graphically, but all of the gameplay stuff is just so fine-tuned at this point that like I think you're right. I think a lot of people are going to say Madden 17.5, and I think a lot of people are wrong because they're just looking at the game and haven't felt it.
You know what's interesting about that is for many years Madden wasn't in a position where it could kind of take that approach. It had fallen behind. It had done too many, you know, we're basically rebooting on a new 3-year plan, those type of things. And now we're to the point where Madden is close enough that it's able to kind of make more subtle adjustments fix some legacy issues instead of revamping, implementing new features that change the way you're playing the standard game, which they continue to do, but it's kind of less, they're less reliant on that now because the gameplay has gotten to a point where it's good. I don't know if I'd say it's great, or perfect, certainly not, but we're close enough now that Madden can get away with that. I'm not sure that that it's enough in some people's eyes, but I definitely think that you see that this year with the approach they took, and it does factor in. I mean, I was watching some of Rex Dixon's live stream on the opening night of EA Access, and he talked about, he specifically said he looks at this Madden as kind of a transitional year. Yeah, they implemented the Frostbite engine, and they had the introduction of the story mode, but there was a lot of stuff maybe they weren't able to get to that they would have liked to do because of those things. Do you feel like they were, those areas, whether it's franchise mode or gameplay, maybe didn't get as much as they should have, though?
I felt that way before I got Madden in my hands. I said this last week on the podcast. I believe that franchise mode kind of got the short end of the stick this year with upgrades because all we saw was the big board and we were told about fixes. But now that I've played it and I've played through a couple seasons of franchise mode to see how the draft works and how trade logic is, how regression and progression were both fixed.
Yeah.
I feel like franchise mode specifically had a lot of what you were talking about, the under the hood fixes that they haven't had time to get to before. Progression and regression specifically, I found that top end quarterbacks stayed in the game longer. I think progression with specifically wide receivers, I've seen wide receivers come in at a lower overall because they are built to have their base ratings, you know, their speed, their catching is all fairly high, but their route running and awareness is low. Well, the route running is one of the easier things to upgrade while awareness isn't, so that makes their OVRs lower. I think a lot of those help the long-term playability of franchise mode for guys that like to go, you know, 4, 5, 6 years in. Besides that, I think gameplay-wise, they got a chance to really tear apart some stuff. Blocking specifically, blocking is much better than it was last year, and I thought last year was a pretty big step up. This year, you're not seeing guys, you know, run into just open space without any kind of assignment blocking. I've seen fullbacks come through the hole and turn almost 90 degrees with the correct mechanics, but turn 90 degrees and look instead of going to the second level. See, like complete seals on the inside of a, like an inside zone run, which I'm really having a lot of fun with. But the other thing that, and this is more for versus the CPU is dangerous again. I feel like the CPU, especially the run game, I've had some games on stream where LeSean McCoy has left me completely on the ground with a juke. I've had Marshawn Lynch against me actually carry me 3 to 4 yards. It feels like the player roles are much better. That being said, you know, I think you're absolutely correct in that those are things that people are not going to get a chance to see on gameplay videos. I feel like you have to be able to have, you know, hands-on time with the game to actually feel those fixes.
Yeah, let's talk a little more about the blocking and the running, because what I see is, and I don't know, I mean, look, I'm only one person, I can only play as much as I can play, and you can only play as much as you can play. We'll have to assess these things a little more as the community spends more time with the game and we get a better picture of things, the big picture. But as far as the running goes, I don't know if it's been a little hit or miss for me. It seems like some plays you get some like gigantic holes to run through, and I busted a lot of long runs that probably more in my time than comparatively to where I was at with the game last year. So I don't know if that's like just excellent blocking doing that, or if that's some kind of a flaw. There's a lot of big plays right now, and I think EA would admittedly say that the game is a little offense leaning right now. But as far as the offensive line blocking goes, at least pass blocking, this is something I did some research on and I wanted to talk about. And I posted this on Twitter. I took, because what they've done this year, what Clinton Oldenburg and the game played team has done, they've worked on the blocking and instituted kind of, as far as awareness ratings go, that an offensive line as a unit can be better than another unit, that they can kind of communicate better. And I definitely saw that in my testing in practice mode, where I had the Cowboys offensive line, I had the Seahawks offensive line, and I had an offensive line that was rated about 60 with players who were all third stringers, fourth stringers, essentially. So, and my data showed this. I mean, not only when I was watching, I was like, wow, that Cowboys offensive line on the plays where I would bring a blitz, you could see how they picked up the blitz. You could see their awareness of where the blitz was coming from and how to deal with it. Then when you move down to the Seahawks offensive line, there were a lot of times where guys would come free. And the lowest rated offensive line was pretty comparable to the Seahawks line. So there's a huge difference in a great offensive line versus a mediocre slash poor offensive line. I didn't see the differentiation there between the Seahawks offensive line, where guys rate out on average, the line rates out like in the mid 70s, and the guys who were fringe players on rosters. So, but what I really like about that is, if you're going up against a bad offensive line, you know you don't have to send extra guys to get pressure on the quarterback. You know your four-man rush is going to get pressure. So I think that is really encouraging to see. I'd like to see a little more differentiation as far as the Seahawks offensive line is a poor starting unit, but they're still better than if you brought in guys who barely make rosters and threw them out on the field. So that's just a little bit of research I did on the offensive line showing that they actually did improve it. That's one of my biggest areas that I pointed out in my review as far as gameplay goes that I was encouraged by.
And I think the other thing about offensive line that I'd like to see communicated better, Clint Oldenburg replied to me on Twitter a couple weeks ago about this. Your center takes precedence when it comes to awareness. Mm-hmm. There is an offensive line awareness rating for the entire line. So you take all five awareness ratings, add them up, and divide by five. But here's the key. The center's awareness rating gets counted twice and eliminates the lowest awareness rating of one of whatever other offensive lineman you have. Mm-hmm. So if you've got like a veteran offensive lineman, like a Nick Mangold, somebody like that with a high awareness, that actually can make up for maybe a rookie at right tackle in franchise mode, or a lower end, like somebody like a project that has a huge run block and a huge pass block, but like a 50 awareness. That actually gets eliminated, and that's exactly how actual NFL, how important the center is to the offensive line.
That makes me wonder then, though, why there isn't more of a difference between the Seahawks, where Justin Britt is clearly their best offensive lineman. He just signed an extension literally today for $9 million a year, and I wasn't able to see the difference between them and the 60-rated offensive line. But obviously you can see the difference at the top. So I think there may be some work still there to be done as far as separating the mediocre to the lower level starting units too, if you were bringing in backups. But
I think on the other side of that, I think it might be actually on the pass rush side that we need to see the work as well, because I think what was said is that an elite pass rusher, you're going to see the domination of elite pass rusher. But if you're just running with like golds, which are 70 to 79 now on Mutt, or like, you know, that kind of NFL starter, but not somebody with a huge power move or a huge finesse move, like a 90 plus finesse or power move, you're not, they don't have the same huge bonus win chances as somebody with 90 plus on those.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it might be work on both sides. I agree with you, though. I would like to see differentiation from, like you said, the Seahawks, who have a mid-level line, NFL standards.
That's generous, but
being generous. But again, with Justin Britt, that center, their awareness goes up. So that might move them up a little bit. To say somebody that's just terrible, I can't even think of like a really horrible offensive. Maybe the Giants. The Giants' offensive line, it just lets Eli Manning get beat to hell on a normal basis. So somebody like that, I would absolutely like to see differentiation between mid to lower level that we see between, as you said, elite to mid level.
Yeah. But overall, I think player differentiation, would you say that has been amplified, I think, in other positions as well? I know that was some of the talk going in that you're going to see, I think, more impact from your higher rated players versus your good players versus your decent players versus your replacement level players, you know, and so on, that you're going to, and this would factor in a lot in franchise mode as well, that you're going to see a big difference based on ratings when you're playing on the simulation style.
I've definitely seen, we're going to do the, let's take this twofold. I've seen superstars definitely play better than starters. Mm-hmm. I think that is extremely evident when you're playing both franchise mode and Madden Ultimate Team. I pulled an elite Jarvis Landry, and going up even against somebody like Marquavis Bryant from the Steelers, who's a gold, it's still a complete difference in how they play. The other side of that is I feel like scat backs and power backs feel completely different this year.
Right.
I definitely feel like jukes were accentuated for like guys like I said, Shady McCoy, whereas big time power guys just roll people through.
Good luck tackling someone like that in the open field, I'll tell you.
it doesn't even have to be one of those like the special truck moves. They can just do regular truck stick and they're going to roll over DBs.
Yeah.
The other thing I saw were larger inside linebackers, like guys known for run stuffing but not side to side, like lower speed guys. You could definitely tell the difference between run stuffers and coverage guys. Like a Danny Trevathan is a monster over the middle, even if you're not controlling him, and he's got a huge zone coverage. I've seen coverage from man and zone coverage really feel different in general. I'd like to see a little better in the zones, and I think they talked about upgrading that with a patch soon after release.
Yeah, that sounds like that's probably a few weeks away, but yeah.
Yeah, I think something specifically they talked about with zone coverage was like deep blues, the cover two, cover three blues. They're not reacting soon enough. So yeah. I would like to see that upgrade because I feel like safeties aren't as powerful as they probably should be in terms of coverage. But differentiation in players, I really, really am seeing that this year. Like I said, then twofold, player roles and player ability.
Yeah, and I'd say the other thing as far as gameplay goes, but this is more of a factor in franchise. What I saw the biggest difference in this year is injuries. And so because you're not just getting injuries for whoever has the ball, because it used to be that only the person who possessed the ball could get injured. Now you're getting off-ball injuries, you're getting offensive linemen hurt, you're getting defensive linemen hurt, and so that forces you as far as franchise goes. And again, like I said, I think this was, for me, the biggest difference, the biggest impact change in how you're going to have to play franchise, that you have to worry about your depth now, all across the board. It used to be, all I needed was five decent offensive linemen. They didn't even have to be decent because the ratings really did not matter all that much on the offensive line. But as we've discussed, it seems to matter more now. Simulations also. I simmed some games. So let me see if I can find my notes here. But I simmed. So I started a Raiders franchise, which was the team that people voted for on Twitter. And I played the first game fully. And I won that game in the final seconds, scoring a touchdown. But what happened was I decided, okay, I'm going to sim the next game. So in the next game, I simmed it, and I lost Derek Carr for like 8 weeks. I lost Marshawn Lynch for like 6 weeks. And I don't have my notes now that I look. But I lost another starter for, I think it was like 9 weeks. And then I simmed another week and I lost two more starters. So I was down five starters from 2 weeks of simulations, and they were all extended injuries. And I looked around the league and there were teams like the Ravens, and they had something like 8 or 9 players already either out for the season or out for like half the season. So I think they may need to balance that a bit they may need to go with shorter. We need to see a little more of the shorter term injuries, the 1 to 2 week injuries. So, and then they just got decimated as the year went on. And that happens in real life somewhat. I mean, you're going to see teams decimated with injuries. So I think that's a good challenge that you add in. But the injuries, as far as the simulations go, tended to be on the long end of things, when I think there are a lot more injuries that impact players on a week-to-week basis, where they may even be able to play through them, or you're going to have those big decisions, or you should have those big decisions in franchise mode where you can choose whether to play them or not. But that was my biggest takeaway from franchise as far as the changes they made. Did you observe anything to do with the injuries through your time playing?
I've seen more injuries. I see the same thing you do. I have seen some of the shorter stuff, some of the, you know, sprains in simming and in game. The one thing I do want to point out is off-ball injuries do not have an animation associated with them.
Yeah.
And that, so everyone should know that ahead of time. It is a randomized chance at the end of the play that you'll see an injury report pop up, and then on the next snap you'll see the little injured and replacement player icon pop up over who it is. So when you see that injured player pop up, know that if it's an off-ball injury, you're not going to see the guy, you know, clutching at his ankle or anything like that. But yeah, I have seen a fair share of the season-ending injuries. I know the Ravens specifically start the franchise with 4 players already on IR.
Oh, that's right. Those are factors
from pre-existing. So one thing I will tell people is turn pre-existing off, because there's a lot of players IR'd already.
Yeah.
That being said, I agree with you. I think there are a little too many in terms of long range. Now, this is one with the injury slider at default. But the other thing that I've really seen in franchise past injuries, and I tweeted this as well, the fatigue. Auto sub sliders last year were at 50-50 for all coaches, including CPU coaches. Mm. When you come in now, they're defaulted to 60-80, which means your default 50 fatigue rating, you will actually see backups, especially at running back and skill positions, come in after long plays or after being used more. That was a huge problem in years past that EA knew about, just couldn't get the fix in for it. Again, one of those legacy issues. So yeah. All coaches now, instead of having 50-50 where guys have to be 50% to sub out, it's now the same as play now was before, where it's 60 out, 80 back in, so does which that, I think is very awesome.
Does that mean we see, and I know that specifically wouldn't do create a system kind of with a dual back system. Are there teams that operate with dual back systems where they're going to kind of split carries, or is that just based on fatigue still?
It's still based on fatigue. Yeah. There's no way to right now to force a CPU team to go dual back. Obviously, as a user, you can use them anytime you want. Mm-hmm. I will say sim stats definitely show a large increase to the backup halfback, especially halfbacks that with lower toughness or stamina ratings as the number one. You definitely see like a 200 carry to like 190 carry for the second back at times. And I'm going to incorporate the fact that probably injuries have something to do with that, as well as stamina. And I think those auto subs affect sim as well. So those auto sub numbers are affecting your sim stats as well as in gameplay stats. So I think that's what we're seeing.
Hey everybody, Rich Grisham here. We're going to take just a moment to thank our sponsors for this week, HelloFresh. These guys do a fantastic job, and I am now a customer, and you can help the Press Row podcast and have some great meals, and we'll tell you how to do that at the end of this. So real quick, let me tell you what HelloFresh is. They are on a mission to save home cooking because it's just too good to go away. They want to make cooking more fun, so they focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. So they think of themselves as three different kind of companies all at one. Number one, a farm-to-box company, because they want everyone to have access to fresh ingredients that inspire great meals. But they're also a couch-to-kitchen company because they think the best way to kick those 5 p.m. excuses is by feeling unstoppable in the kitchen. And third, they are a fork-to-feel-good company because when you cook and eat delicious and healthy meals, you're going to want to keep doing it again and again. And I can vouch for this because HelloFresh sent us a big old box with several meals, and it came in an insulated box, and it had the frozen
ice packs in there, which kept everything nice and fresh. And those, by the way, are reusable. So we tossed them into the freezer, and we actually wound up using them when we went to the beach a few days later. They offer different things, a classic box, a veggie box, and a family box. You can order 3, 4, or 5 different meals per week designed for either 2 or 4 people. New recipes are created every week. In 6 easy-to-master steps, they get you chopping, zesting, and cooking like a natural, because most of the recipes take just 30 minutes and require minimal equipment. And this is totally legit. As I mentioned, my wife and my son, he's 9, he was working with her, and they got all the stuff out, and they chopped, and they zested, and they cooked, and they did everything that they had to do. And it was a really, really great meal at the end. And I am now officially a HelloFresh customer. So the way that you can help us out is simple. All you got to do, you got to go to HelloFresh.com and enter the code PRESSROW30 when you subscribe. When you do that, you get $30 off your first week of deliveries. That is a great savings. So HelloFresh.com, enter PRESSROW30 when you subscribe. This is a really good service. It really makes life easier and better. You know, if you want to have a good meal, but you want to prepare it and you want to sort of get everybody in the kitchen, this is a fantastic way to do it. And it's cost effective too. For less than $10 a meal, you're going to have much better dinner than if you were, you know, to do that guilty pleasure, drive on over to that fast food place or order that same pizza that you've had 4 times in the last 8 days. Check out HelloFresh.com and enter the promo code PRESSROW30. Get $30 off your first week of deliveries. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, HelloFresh. Thank you for listening to the PressRow podcast, and enjoy the rest of the show.
So give me your thoughts on the coaching adjustments, because this is a feature that it was in NCAA football before, of course, NCAA football died. And it finally made its way to Madden. It gives you kind of the ability to influence the players on the field more, especially the ones you're not controlling, because it can affect their tendencies. You can also match up corners on receivers. It is kind of, you know, within the play call menu, it doesn't really stand out, right? I mean, I didn't notice it for a while, until I kind of sought it out. Was that the same for you? And what have you found as far as how well it works?
I think coaching adjustments are awesome. Anything that allows me to tell my players what to do, especially the highly touted defensive back wide receiver matchups. I know people want to do it manually, but the way it's laid out, I think, is the second best option. Where you can do it by height, overall rating, speed, and you can change that on the fly. Every play call, you can change that. So if you get down to like within the 20-yard line and you want to change it to by height instead of by speed, you can do that. And I highly suggest you do that. I love that the blocking, if you make blocking aggressive on offense, you get more holding penalties. Yeah. If you do jump the snap more, aggressive, you get more jumping of the snap. I think that's awesome. The one question I have, and it's been stated the CPU uses them by, I forget which dev it was, and I wish I'd rather quote that than say that. So I'm going to say I think I heard that the coaching adjustments were used by the CPU. I'd like to see some kind of evidence that the coaching adjustments are definitely used by the CPU in this, because I know everything else, all the other mechanics the CPU can use, I'd like to see the CPU, some kind of proof of the CPU using those as well.
All right, so we've got one kind of touted feature this year was they were going to implement 3 different play styles. There was going to be arcade, there's going to be simulation, and there's going to be competitive. And basically it would allow the developers to tailor each one to a different type of experience. So arcade would be a little more over the top, a little more wide open, bigger plays, bigger hits. Simulation would be kind of the realistic NFL experience, including penalties and injuries and everything we've been talking about. And competitive would be stick skill based primarily. So you're not going to see as many dropped passes. You're not going to get injuries. You're not going to, what else does that eliminate? It just kind of eliminates,
you get boosts to fumbles for hit sticks. In general, just everything is more based on the user using their players instead of random ratings. Now ratings still matter, but they matter a little less, and you get bigger user bonuses for actually controlling the players involved in the play.
Yeah. So basically they're rewarding you for doing things on the field as opposed to kind of the players being who they are and relying on their ratings and making mistakes. So there are fewer mistakes, less randomness involved for competitive. What I found with the three of them, though, is they, you know, other than what was obviously different as far as, well, penalties are turned off in competitive, or injuries are turned off in competitive, or in arcade, I broke a lot more tackles. Other than that, it almost felt to me like between the three, and I played a couple games on each, between the three, it was almost like arcade felt to me as though it was just a normal rookie or pro difficulty game. Simulation was more like an all-pro game, and competitive was more like an all-Madden game. Not exactly, but that was the sense I got. I thought it was going to be arcade was going to be a little more wild than it was. It's still pretty grounded. Simulation's basically what we expected, and competitive I thought would be more of a, I don't know, turnover fest or what, because defensive backs wouldn't drop things. But ratings still do factor in, and that's something I learned through that, was ratings still matter. It's just that those mistakes, those obvious mistakes, are eliminated, and the randomness that you tend to get is eliminated. And to me, that takes out a lot of the fun of what football is, as far as overcoming situations, overcoming turnovers, overcoming penalties, things you have to get by in order to succeed. It's more than just first and 10 and then just moving down the field all the time, which you tend to see in football games without some of that to counterbalance it. But yeah, I was a little disappointed by the play styles because they were not all that different to me. Have you felt the same way about those? I'm curious what you think as far as like the arcade versus competitive.
I agree with you that arcade feels like a rookie pro kind of mode, but it still has some difficulty to it. Like you can throw the ball up and make catches, but if you put it on arcade and then put it on all Madden difficulty, it's still a difficult game.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I agree with that. I agree that simulation, you can absolutely tell that there's randomness, which, again, like you, I like the randomness of football. I like the weird.
Interesting. Yeah.
Exactly. Where competitive shines is head-to-head. And we're not going to really see a competitive change playing offline, with the exception of the fact that we will be penalized more for not controlling, like switching off on defense.
Mm.
Online head-to-head, I can tell you, I played a couple on competitive level. I played a couple of Mutt Squad games last night, and I played a head-to-head versus a friend on stream today. You are penalized for not switching, without a question.
Mm.
In coverage, you were penalized. You were penalized on tackles, because if the other guy switches, he gets a boost to his ratings. So all things considered, if you have two exactly even guys going after a jump ball, if you are on defense and you don't switch and he does to jump, he's going to have a better chance of getting that ball. And that's how competitive mode is programmed, I believe.
Yes.
Against the computer, you're still going to have that advantage if you switch off. I think that's where you would notice it more.
Yeah.
But I really don't think offline gamers are going to notice competitive versus sim that much more, with the exception of, like you said, if they switch all the time, they're going to see some more turnovers.
So I like, obviously, as we talked about, the randomness is something that we like. And I think it does obviously make more sense to have that randomness in franchise, where you're playing a season and you can withstand things happen to you that go against you, that over a course of a season, you're going to have things that go for you also to balance that out. In the competitive environment online and in things like esports, it often is down to one game, or you need to win almost every game. And I can see why you wouldn't want things to go against you, why you want things to be kind of like an even environment. The only thing that gets me about that, that bothers me about that, is with the esports, what EA does often is they put a lot of strategy, and it's not just about playing the game. Obviously, that's the biggest part of it, but it's also about cultivating and putting together your roster in the best way possible, whether that's using it as an ultimate team or as a draft champions, or now known as Mutt Draft, or salary cap in Ultimate Team. I mean, there's that is part of the strategy. Is okay, where am I going to make my team strong? Where am I going to make leave a weakness at? And what you saw last year was everybody's offensive line in those tournaments was in the 60s because it really didn't matter. But if you have ratings not factoring in as much, then I think that kind of takes away from the intrigue of putting together the team, deciding this player versus this player, or however you want to put shape that roster, which can either assist you as far as your own strengths and your own weaknesses, or allow other people to exploit your weaknesses. I think that may eliminate some of the interesting roster decisions, and which is something they like to promote, obviously, when they're doing these events, is let's look at their roster, who are the players they've got. But if they're all going to make essentially the same plays, I'm not sure if that's going to work for them as well anymore.
I think it changes the choices into a different mindset, if that makes any sense. I think you and I, again, liking the randomness, we're used to looking to make choices that an NFL team would make in terms of, you know, the ratings mattering. Mm-hmm. I think for competitive, salary cap ranked and you know, Mutt Draft and all that, I think the choices come down to this guy has a ratings threshold to get this animation. This guy has a ratings threshold to be able to win a certain amount of pass rushes against a gold offensive lineman. Mm. So that's I think that's where the – and I use this term a lot now since getting more involved in esports, but I think that's where the meta of the game is for competitive, is that you're looking for what bonuses, what ratings thresholds trigger bonuses for you.
Right.
And if to make a, I guess, kind of far analogy from that, I think that's kind of where esports in general goes. With, like, Dota, maybe not as much, because Dota, everybody has even ratings, but they have different roles. Sort of the same thing here. So do you pick man coverage guys that are going to give you better hip-to-hip coverage and then a bonus for switching on? Mm. Or do you take better press guys that are going to give you the better animations at the line to maybe stop smaller wide receivers? How are you building your team in that term? So again, I think it's just a different mindset. And I don't know if it's a popular one. I don't know if it's kind of a underground one, if that's the kind of mindset they're going, because Mutt is Mutt in general is a different mindset from building a team in franchise. A Mutt team might not work in franchise mode, and a franchise team might not work in Mutt mode because there's different strategies, as you said. I hope that people, when they're looking at those team buildings, find the interest in why they're building by individual rating, because OVR does not matter at all in Mutt. It's all about, does this guy's catch rating, if this guy's catch rating is over 90, there's a chance I might get an aggressive catch, you know, 30 yards down the field. And I might get the animation like the Moss. Everyone likes the Moss because he had a perfect combo of individual ratings. That's where I think the off the field team building comes in, instead of franchise, where you might not be looking as closely at single ratings like that.
So We're essentially talking about Ultimate Team now at this point, so let's go into that a little further. What do you think about Ultimate Team kind of being the default way to play online now? Because almost everything other than just the standard online games with NFL teams and the ability to play online franchise, other than that, almost everything is tucked into Ultimate Team now, whether it's just the standard Ultimate Team online head-to-head or Mutt Drafts or the new Mutt Squads. Almost everything is going to Ultimate Team that's online related now. I think that's kind of an interesting thing to look at. And it makes sense to me. I mean, it may not please everyone out there, but it makes sense to me. So because a feature like Mutt Squads, which we had Ultimate Team play in Madden in the past, and yeah, they didn't really do much with it after they introduced it. and because of that, usership was not very high on that mode. But the only, almost the only way they can now justify new features like a Mutt Squads is to put it within Ultimate Team and to implement it in a way that allows people to spend money, obviously, towards it, but to also keep their interest over a longer period of time because they are involving their Ultimate Teams within it. So I think Mutt Squads has a much better chance of success because it's in Ultimate Team, because people are continuing to work at their Ultimate Teams. They're getting Ultimate Team rewards by playing the games. They are bringing in their rosters. Each person is bringing in a part of their roster or part of their kind of franchise, essentially, within Ultimate Team, because someone can bring in their coach and their playbooks. And they all have different roles in Mutt Squads. And actually, I got a chance to play at least one game of Mutt Squads. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Definitely requires a lot of communication and the timing still, especially if it's a lot easier to run than it is to pass, because even if you run a route, your timing can be off with the quarterback, who's going to be user-controlled also. And then you can blow coverages on defense, whatever it's going to be. But I really enjoyed Mutt Squads, but it did make me think about how almost every online feature now is going to be fed in through Ultimate Team, and there's really nothing we can do about that.
Yeah, Mutt Squad, well, because it has to have an attempt to cultivate it into a crowd first. I could see a day, a year or two down the line where Mutt Squads, because of the way it's built, then goes into like franchise mode. It allows users to possibly do a 3-on-3 franchise game. I could see that happening at some point once the feature is, you know, thoroughly worked out and there's no bugs in it. As of right now, I still believe that Mutt Squads is going to end up being their esports white whale.
I think it should be. I think it should be too. Compelling to watch, units, teams of people, working together in that environment than the current just person versus person setup they've got now.
Right, I agree. We've talked about this before a couple times. I think seeing a team set up with the interaction of the team sitting together on a championship stage like Twitch or YouTube or even ESPN for Madden or NFL Network, I think that's way more compelling, as you said, than watching 1v1 guys yelling across the screen at each other. And I will say this, Mutt Squads is going to break up friendships. If you get competitive, I played with PX1 Sports and G-Mia yesterday against Rex Dixon, Scorpion, and Smitty. And there was a point where Rex was screaming at Scorpion on his stream. And there was a point where I was streaming and G-Mia was streaming. I actually turned G-Mia's stream on to let my stream listen to him trash talk me because I missed an interception and I missed a throw from him. It was real. I mean, it was entertaining. Don't get me wrong. It was completely entertaining. Yeah. But there are going to be some real close friends that are going to get come to blows over that mode at some point. The other thing that if you're an esports fan that I think is going to be interesting is, and I think I've mentioned this on this podcast before too, there are guys that are sponsored by specific gaming teams that are not going to be allowed to team up. Like Problem Right is our Luminosity guy, so he's not going to be able to team up. Those like sponsorships. There are going to be sponsors that tell these guys you cannot team with these guys, and that is going to affect chemistry as well. Because there are a couple guys that are sponsored by two different people that are really close that actually play against each other for practice. That would be perfect Mutt Squads partners. If Mutt Squads ends up, and I don't think it'll be this year, I think it would probably be 19 before we really see it on a big stage. If Mutt Squads ends up being that, look for that to actually be, again, another compelling storyline of friends matching up against each other because they're on different sponsors.
Yeah. So other Ultimate Team stuff, just my observations based on a few hours of playing Ultimate Team. You start with lower ratings, and the cards you get out of packs are rated lower. They're definitely padding. They're giving themselves some room to put out better cards as the year goes on, which is the usual way about it. But I think they backed themselves into a corner a bit in recent years where they end up kind of getting to the top of that scale a little early. And so I've been able to get my team up, and you get excited because elites are now 80 plus. I've got a couple guys in the low to mid 80s. And those are really good players as far as Ultimate Team goes. They've also got upgradable cards, which is a really, really clever idea. Ability to get a guy, if you like him, you can continue to, and this is not across the board. There are only certain players, certain cards that can do this, but you can work towards improving their card and getting their rating up. They've also got packs where you can choose what you want out of them. It'll give you kind of a pool of cards, and you can choose what you like. And then also the thing that's obviously stood out for reasons is sad reasons, but not having an NCAA football game for so long. Texas and Oregon, who appear in the story mode, there are some long shot solos involving Texas and Oregon. There's also solos involving high school and things like that. And then you also get players from, including Dan Marino, from long shot for your team if you complete it. So I think they've done some good stuff here with Ultimate Team. You know, this is always a mode that's difficult to assess on day one because they're going to continue working on it for the next 12 months. They're going to continue putting out new content. But I think carrying over from what they did last year, there's a ton you can do without spending money, which is always important. But for those who want to spend money, they're definitely able to do so.
There's over 100 solos up right now.
Yeah,
for Ultimate Team.
Some are locked away. I haven't been able to get to them all, but yeah.
Yep, because you have to be a certain mutt level. The mutt levels are new this year.
Yeah.
One of them, you get one of them if you do, I think the Journey gives you an 86 overall Davante Adams with over 60,000 coins just for that. Like, yeah. they're entering people into the mode at a much easier gateway these days. For good reason, obviously. And I think the other thing that's really cool about them stretching out the ratings the way they are is, I think, and that sports gamer TJ has said this all the time, the Aaron Rodgers debacle, where there was like 12 Aaron Rodgers cards last year.
Yeah, that was absurd.
But every one of them was only like a plus one to the last one.
Yeah.
For them to stretch it out now, they're going to be able to put out cards that have a significant jump in ratings that actually make them play differently online, which is important that they're not putting out, like I said, Aaron Rodgers week one player of the week. Aaron Rodgers player three, or week three player of the week is like one plus one throw power. And that's the only difference.
Which, so yeah, you would never know. You put them both right on the field, you'd never feel a difference. It doesn't matter.
Exactly. Like, and if in lift, we were talking about casuals, Brian. Like, casuals never know that. They just see new card and want to get it. So this is going to give them a larger gap between players. I think that's going to be important for casuals and hardcore alike in that mode. And I think that's important to – it's always important to remember your audience, and more people are getting into Madden Ultimate Team. Like you said, Longshot, we talked about this before. Longshot was not created for Madden Ultimate Team people. It was not created for franchise people. It was created for new people to put their hands on the product.
And then transition them to Ultimate Team eventually would be the
hope, is exactly
course.
What they did, because if you finish Longshot, you get cards for Ultimate Team.
Yeah.
So it's a very cool, you know, way to do it. Very, you know, smooth transition, which is the way it's supposed to be. But like you said, everything is feeding into Ultimate Team, and they're making it so that way anybody can get started, which I think is cool, because that's kind of the way, you know, this generation is going anyway, in terms of bite size, wanting to do quick solos, wanting to get a quick game, get back out, that kind of stuff.
All right. So finally, let's talk about one more big feature for Madden this year. And that's, of course, Long Shot, the story mode. Now, this is a little more difficult for us to discuss because I don't want us to spoil anything about it. There are a bunch of surprises along the way. So I'll just kind of lay out what I did in the review, which is, this is very much a movie that has some interactive segments within it. Those interactive segments, though, the playable moments are actually really clever and pretty fun. And there's some really cool touches they've done within there. And again, I can't talk about it too much, other than if you played EA Access, I believe you got to play through a part where you did experience one of the high school games, and the commentators in that are just fantastic. In the
commentators are alone are worth playing it Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed that. But there's a lot of stuff that comes down the line, and I'd say the first part of the mode that people have played through on EA Access, probably the weaker part of it. It gets really good in the middle and then the end. But they really made some gut-wrenching decisions you have to come to later on in the game, which you know, I could kind of see coming, and almost I was like, I knew what was going to happen, and I was like, oh, they're not going to do this to me. And then they did. but that's a compliment, because it was tough, very difficult decisions for me to make. An emotional story, really well acted. I thought the standout was Russ Blackwell, who played Coach Jack Ford. He was excellent. He's someone who I didn't recognize at first. I knew he seemed familiar. And he was from the show Banshee, which I absolutely loved. And then it's got like Mahershala Ali, Oscar winner. It's more like a cameo for him, though. Scott Porter from Friday Night Lights. So recognizable people. It's pretty well acted. I'd say Chad Johnson may be the weakest link in that regard. but really well done. It's by far my favorite story mode I've ever played. A lot of whether you're going to like it and get value out of it is what you're looking for out of a story mode. Like I said, this is not a traditional career mode. You're not leveling up your guy. You're not choosing the position you play. You're very much just along for the ride and trying to influence what happens. And apparently there are multiple endings, which makes me want to go back and play it again, because I got a certain ending, which I thought was a very interesting ending. But I want to see how I could change it, because there are definitely things that impact the way you're seen by scouts, the way you and your buddy Colt Cruz, the receiver, the way you both are kind of viewed and evaluated for the draft in the end. And it just really nails kind of this reality show culture we live in now. And I thought it was very well done in how they implemented that into the story and things like social media. It was not, you know, you could tell they had a grasp of how people use social media and how people watch TV and follow sports. That I thought it was really well done. And they also get into a lot of really hardcore football stuff, football terminology, things like play calling, which ironically makes the regular part of Madden look kind of dumbed down when you think about how when they go through this mini game where you have to recall the play that was sent in to you by the coach, and you're like, wow, I don't know if I can do that, and I missed it a few times. But it kind of makes you see, like, okay, yeah, you know, that's not exactly the way plays are called in real life, the way that you're picking plays in Madden. What'd you think of Long Shot without spoiling anything?
Without spoiling anything, I'm going to pick out one thing that you said in context. Mm-hmm. And this is my challenge to anyone that listens to this podcast. When was the last time you felt something playing a video game? And I mean, I'm not talking about competitive edge. I mean, when was the last time a video game made you feel an emotion about somebody in it? Mm-hmm. I think we've all had those moments. We've all had those moments. I admittedly, Final Fantasy for me, I think it was Final Fantasy VI or whatever, IV in the States, where the twins, Palom and Porom, turned themselves to stone. I remember crying as a kid because they had passed that way. This made me feel something like I haven't felt in a very long time in terms of visceral emotion, like you said. It is not Madden.
No.
It is a movie that you are playing out, much like I'm gonna analogize to it as a Telltale game. Mm-hmm. For how good Telltale is, I think this is better than most of what Telltale has done. Mm-hmm. Not all of them, but most of them. So my challenge is to give it 2 hours. Everybody that owns Madden 18 should at least give Long Shot 2 hours to make you feel something.
That's not a big investment. That's not a big investment.
Not a big investment at all. And I think the reward, there's going to be some people that don't like it. You're absolutely right. There are going to be some people that Long Shot is just not for.
Yeah.
But Mike Young and his team over there have done something phenomenal, something, again, visceral, and something different. And it deserves the eyes that it's going to get. And I really hope people give it the eyes that it deserves. So I challenge everybody to give it 2 hours and see if it makes you feel something. If it doesn't, put it away. Never touch it again. You're not hurting anything. Guess what? It's free on top of whatever you're buying anyway. But
yeah,
that's exactly. I 2 hours. Get back to us. Let us know at Press Row Podcast, at Pasta Padre, at Millennium or Mills Gaming TV, whatever my new name is now. Let us know if you liked it or if you didn't like it. That's my challenge to everybody that listens to this podcast.
And based on that's very well said. And based on the tweets I've seen from people who have only played the first part of it, and plus the reviews that are out already, it seems like it's getting a really positive reaction, which is good to see. Hey, if they were going to put all the time and effort into making this mode, which maybe not everybody thought was necessary or necessarily wanted, because it's obviously to attract a different audience as well. But I think it does a great job of relaying that to even the veterans of Madden and just football fans that, hey, if they were going to do that, let's hope they do it well. And I think they did. So, that'll do it for this episode. We got into a lot, but there's so much to talk about with Madden.
It feels like we barely scratched the surface,
really,
doesn't it?
Really?
It really does. That's so cool to feel that we've been talking for almost an hour and we've barely scratched the surface of what has been in this game.
Yep. It always feels like that when we get into review time with these games and we get our first several hours, and then we reevaluate as we go. There's still a lot to learn about the game. And, you know, one thing EA has proven over the years is that their post-release support is fantastic. So they're going to be on top of a lot of these things that we thought are maybe deficient or any issues that people are having. And I think they're going to probably improve the game from here. And that's something we can rely on based on their track record. So next week, Mills, I think you'll probably be back with us. We're going to have a big panel on hand for the review roundtable, which we do every year for all the big games. Gonna look forward to that. I hope everybody's excited for that. At that point, even if you're not on Xbox One, if you're on PS4, you'll have had the game if you went out and bought it on release day, or at least the GOAT edition. So we'll be able to talk about it more, get your thoughts on the game, collect some of those on Twitter. Mills will get kind of your the temperature of Operation Sports and what you're seeing through your Twitch chat and everything like that. So we will gauge all of that next week and maybe have even a better idea of how Madden stands for this year right now and how we see it developing for the future. So thank you very much. Mills Gaming TV on Twitch, on Twitter, everywhere else, on Pasta Padre. You can find Pasta Padre pretty much anywhere you look. So thank you very much for listening to this episode, and we'll be back for that show next week. Look forward to having you there for that one. Take care, everyone.